My great grandfather, William Moore, I think he probably started cutting ice in the river down there. Well, somehow or other, they ended up at the Cascade. And this is another very important thing pertaining to this retail ice business. My grandfather, Frederick Clark Moore, and William Vaughn were buddies. And although the Vaughns had all kinds of money, it didn't make any difference. He gave my grandfather permission. I think they were cutting ice out there, and somebody in the Vaughn family, this is way back, probably the early 1900s or late 1800s, said they didn't want him cutting ice anymore. So my grandfather went to old Bill Vaughn, told him the situation. So Bill Vaughn gave him a written piece of paper, said that he had his permission to cut all the ice he wanted on there. And then later on, old Bill Vaughn wrote a letter to the city, to the mayor, and I'll show it to you, saying when they get ready to buy this Vaughn field, my grandfather had to pay 2% of his net profit to the city to buy the Vaughn field. So it wasn't Vaughn's money that bought that Vaughn field. Then later on, Mayor Mrs. Marvin, who was the daughter, she told my father he couldn't cut ice there anymore. The guy that worked for Bill Vaughn, the caretaker, his name was Mark Grimes. He said, "Don't worry about it, Arthur." He says, "They all go to New York in the wintertime anyways." So she ordered this Mark Grimes to take the gate out of the dam so the pond would drain. And then when they went to New York, Mark put the gate back in again. He cut the ice. Well, one year she came home a little early and they were cutting ice out there. And my brother was a witness to this, and Hoppy, of course, these people all passed away. She came down there with her brother, Sam Vaughn, came from the Litchfield Road. There's a road down in there to the pond, and she's screaming bloody murder. "I told you people not to, I told you you couldn't cut ice here anymore." Well, about that time, she stepped on a piece of ice, and the way it was described to me, she went right flat on her back, knocked her cold as a haddock. And the brother, who was a real regular guy, he wasn't one of these snobs, Sam Vaughn, regular guy. And so they looked at her, and my father says, "Well, Sam, what do you want to do with her?" So he says, "Okay, let's put her in the back of the ice truck." So they put a plank down, laid her on a plank through in the body of the ice truck. She didn't know anything about it. So she came to, so they hauled her down there to the Vaughn estate. I guess she came to, but we heard no more about cutting ice up there. My father said it was so funny. There's three men standing around there looking. She's out there colder than a haddock. Sam said, so my father said, "What are you going to do with her?" Sam would throw her in the back of the ice truck. This was his sister. Oh, anyway. So every spring he drained the pond after this, she told him he couldn't cut ice there. Because when she got home, the pond was drained, and they used to graze their cattle down there on the bottom pond. Plus the fact, my father was able to get back all his iron tools that they lost overboard. You know, when they were working in the canals there in the ice field, couldn't help it. That stuff was heavy. Sometimes, you know, it would slip out of your hands. Down it would go. Yeah, God, they recovered all kinds of stuff every spring. They did it when it dried out, of course. 1920. My grandfather, what happened was, my father didn't want to do it. He was working for the Maine Central Railroad, and he was learning to be a fireman and an engineer. I think my father and mother were on honeymoon out to Cobb Sicconi, and he drove out there. His hired man quit on him. So he said he needed to have some help. Well, my father, what the hell was he going to do? And there was an awful fracas about it, but father gave in. His father had to help him, you know. So he got stuck with it. Worst job, hardest way to make it. The farmers work hard 24-hour days, but he worked 24 hours a day. You see, his delivery route, as far as he went toward the country, as far as he went was the Stock Farm Hill. He didn't go to Granny Hill. Didn't go any place like that. These people all had to have ice, so they came to the house and get it. Sometimes 10, 11 o'clock, they get him out of bed, get ice. Mother says, "There's enough of that." So they put a sign down there that says closed at 7 p.m. Boy, you ought to have heard the protest. And he tried to tell them, these are all people that he knows. He said, I can't stay up all night, doing this. Some of them didn't pay any attention to it. He still drove it up. So finally, he says, okay. He says, instead of getting in the house and running back and forth, it was warm weather. He sat out in his ice truck. That's where he sat, just like he was selling fish or meat. So they'd drive in the yard and didn't pay attention to the 7 o'clock. But he did. After a while, as he got older, he says, I can't do this anymore. So he just said, no more after 7 o'clock. And he turned people down. He couldn't put up with that. Like I said, we were kids at Christmas time. We had to wait till he got home before we got a Christmas tree. Sometimes at 11, 12 o'clock in noontime before he got back, see. Because he had to do it all by himself. I wasn't old enough to help him then. He gave Christmas off. Well, all I can tell you is my grandfather, they just kept on going, doing the business, doing what he had done. And my father did what my grandfather did, all the way. And finally, like I said, 1950, he turned what business was left over to his hired man. The hired man, there was none enough to keep him, so he sold the ice trucks. That was the end of it. Kind of sad. But it was a terrible way to make a living. Oh, awful. Okay, 4 o'clock in the morning, they stopped peddling ice. It took anywhere, on Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays, Saturdays, he went to make the trip, long trip down to Loudoun Hill and Farmingdale, way down to the Grants Crossing, 4 times a week. He did that. He did it Saturday because, Sunday they didn't deliver around town. They delivered in the street, Main Street. And they worked their way back. By the time they got back, that ice truck was empty. Then they had another V8 truck for that. They loaded the both of them up. And one truck would start, go one part of town. I don't remember just how they split it up. But one truck took... It took one truck 2 hours to do Water Street. Double park. And you couldn't do that today. You couldn't double park there. It shows you how difference in the auto traffic. Double park started right down where what they call a Thai restaurant. It used to be Fido's filling station. You start on that side. Go all up the east side. We had 6 grocery stores. We had 3 meat markets and about 4 or 5 beer parlors that all had to have ice. And then, on top of that, there was apartments up overhead, and you had to do all those apartments up there on both sides of the street. So it was a chore to just get through the main street. And but this was every day. This was not 4 days a week or 3 days a week. So he wouldn't go beyond Winthrop Street. He'd go Tuesdays and Thursdays and Saturdays up there. It was quite a lot of area to cover for just, with 2 trucks. You had to have a man, you had to have 2 men to a truck, so he hired 3 men during the summer. He hired, for hired men, he had his regular hired, but then he hired 2 to 3 of the high school boys who wanted to get strengthened up for football. And they were, lifting that stuff. Kept them in shape. So that's the way that went. You couldn't tell this, how irregular weather is. But most of the time in the winter, a lot of people who had cellars just put their stuff in the cellar. They weren't heated, It was a good place to put the refrigerator. So as the weather warmed up, the cellar didn't work anymore. And then, of course, you had the ice boxes, the refrigerators. Ice boxes, and when the ice melted, you got water out of it. Well, the water used to come down through the bottom of the refrigerator into a pan, and so you had to keep that pan emptied. And a lot of people would forget to empty it. We always checked the pans when we delivered ice to make sure it wasn't going to run over. But a lot of them did run over. They'd forget to empty them. But then people that had a dirt cellar, they bored a hole right through the kitchen floor and put a pipe down through there and just let it drip. Well, that's what we did at our house. My God, this scum would get all, the water would drip on it. By the time it got to the floor, it was all scum. If we saw that a pan was going to run over before they got home from work, we'd dump it in the sink, you know. You know, things were so much different. People were so different. They left the houses open. And if the door was locked, they'd tell you where the key was. 9 times out of 10, it was under the doormat, you know. But anyway, they would go off, leave the door open, and they'd leave the whatever they ordered for ice, like 10 cents, 15 cents, they'd leave that right on the corner of the refrigerator. And if they left a quarter and they owed you a dime, you'd leave them 15 cents change. That's the way it was. My family never kept anything for a souvenir, for anything like that. And the pictures, a lot of pictures, most of the pictures that I got were taken by somebody else. I said, gee, how come you people don't take more pictures, I said, of your business? She says, son, she said, we were too busy trying to make a living. We didn't have time to take pictures. And furthermore, we didn't have the money to buy a camera. So anyway, that was the end of that. They had a good excuse. The ice boxes had all kinds of styles. There was big ones. They had four doors, and one of them was an ice compartment, the other three. Then you had the big ones, the big lift-up tops. When my father started selling the coolerators, he replaced all these old boxes and just threw them on the dump. If he'd have kept... built a barn and kept every one of those ice boxes, he could have paid for the barn and a lot more. You know, at this time, the stage of the game, these things are going $400 or $500. People use them in the cocktail. I got an apartment size out there in the kitchen. I got that out there. Only hauls a little small piece of ice, but it was apartment size. It'd keep a quart of milk in there and some butter and stuff like that. That's about all I was good for. 10 cents was the cheapest one, 15 cents, 20 cents, and 25 cents. No. 10-cent one, I'm going to say the 10-cent one probably weighed anyway 15, 20 pounds. 25-cent one was probably 35 pounds, something like that. And he never used a scale. He never had a hanging scale. All the other ice companies all had scales on their trucks. He refused to carry it. He said, If you don't think I'm giving you more for your money, he says, you can go weigh it. You can have it free. I said, I always cut them big enough so I know I cut this. A lot of people from out of state would pull on to the ice truck and say, he needs some ice for the go camping and stuff like that. Oh, I'm just going to weigh it? He said, I don't need to weigh it. you don't need to weigh it because he was that smart. Let me tell you something about cutting ice. It's just as difficult to cut a cake of ice as it is a diamond. You can't, because your ice, you start lengthways, you cut it lengthways like this. And he and his hired man, nobody else could cut ice like they could, because they did it for so many years, you know. He'd start in the middle, and you'd tss, 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 tss. And if it didn't start going right, he had to start up here and start the crack up here and come to this and go there. Because if you didn't cut it right, what happens? You've lost your ice. You can get probably one or two pieces of it, but if you cut it right, you lose the whole cake. And I tried it once or twice. I couldn't do it. Because when the ice truck stopped on the street anywhere, Who would gang up on the truck? But the kids always got to get summertime. You know, got to get some pieces of ice that he chipped to make a fit in a refrigerator, stuff like that. But what they wanted was a snow ice. When he did this, like this, kept doing this, all this beautiful snow ice kept building up. And of course, the kids didn't realize. Geez, one time he almost cut a kid's hand off because he was getting you know this quick how quick the kids are, and he stopped right there. From then on, boy, he says, nobody touches this. Nobody gets in this, staying around this ice house, this ice truck. So he kept them away. And then he got through cutting, get ready to move on. They could grab the ice. But boy, oh boy, that was close. I wasn't there, but I know he told me about it. But I know the kids were always after that snow ice, you know. Snow ice, you pay good money, though. You get a snow cone. That's what they got. didn't know enough. I said, I should have said, take it home, put some strawberry syrup. You got to get a horse on there, 4 inches, at least 4 inches of ice. He wouldn't put a horse on there until it was thick enough. The purpose of getting the horse on it is to get that snow scraped off of there before it froze and became part of the ice field. That's the first thing that had to be done. And then as the ice got thicker, he kept measuring it. Sometimes he ran out of ice. Get down to the bottom layer of the ice house, said, you've got one solid tier of solid ice. Every one of those cakes had to be barred, chiseled apart. And the poor guy that chiseled that ice. Fortunately, it was in the fall of the year, you know, when that happened. And he didn't have to cut 20 cakes a day or something like that, just enough to get by. By the way, in the summertime, they would haul 80 cakes of ice out, ready for the next day on a Saturday, 80 cakes. Unreal. It was a terrible way to make a living. And that ice would come down that runway from high up, and you had what they call snubbers on those runways, big sticks. Big screw sticking up to slow them down when they came down that runway, and they'd come down. They had a great big 12. I got a picture of a big, great big log at the end of it to keep them from going off the platform. Then the next step was we had two great big molasses, 100-gallon molasses kegs there, and then that was running water all the time. Had to wash the cakes all off because the cakes are buried in sawdust and hay. You see, as you use the tear, it keeps. When the ice horse was full, then they hauled up, I don't know how many tons of sawdust they hauled up there to cover that whole ice, to cover the whole ice house, about 6 inches of sawdust. Ice houses were built with insulation. They built 12 inches apart, that was full of sawdust. That's for insulation. So naturally, when the ice got down at the platform, all covered with sawdust. Well, they all had to be washed off good, you know. Then they loaded them on the truck, and when the truck was loaded, off they'd go, different places. Yeah. So we covered all the way up to the top of Winthrop Hill. Anybody lived out in Windy Hill, or what's another name, Shady Lane, anywhere out that way, if they wanted ice, they had to come to the house. A lot of guys would come home from work, like shoe factory or wool mill, something like that, and pick it up on their way home out in the country.